Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about increasing protein levels in crops, especially wheat, and specifically wheat. But there has been more talk here in the last few years about protein levels in different crops. I kind of look at it as it's, well, obviously the protein thing can be a big deal because there's a possibility of premium, possibility you could get less money if you have low protein. But I just think overall about the crop, the health of the crop and the nutrition that we're pumping into that seed, that grain that eventually is going to go somewhere and could potentially be used for human beings. Well, even if it doesn't, if it's going to livestock, for example, well, it's super important there too. We want the livestock to do well because ultimately a lot of that ends up in human beings somehow, some way. So anyway, we'll talk today about overall crop health, but especially protein levels in wheat. And I guess when we talk specifically about that one thing, if all you said is, look, I just want to have a higher protein level in wheat, I'd say, oh, that's pretty simple. Just have more nitrogen later in the season. That's by far and away the number one factor. If you want more nitrogen late in the season, you can do one of two things, or maybe both. You just apply more nitrogen later, or you have higher organic matter levels, because more organic matter means more nitrogen release as the summer progresses and as it gets hotter during the year. All right, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. Before we do, I just want to say, if you've got a question for us, just email us, radio@agphd.com. You can also send us a note on X, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. We're on TikTok as well. Or if you'd like to go old school, you can just give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. All right, let's hit the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, get a question here that came in from AK. And he said, hey guys, I'm curious, you're talking about soybean gall midge.
Yep.
Why don't they have BT soybeans? There's BT traits available in corn for a lot of pests like this, but nothing in soybeans.
There actually are BT soybeans. They're used down in South America. Just unfortunately, we don't have BT solutions for our main pests. So I think about in our region of the United States, probably the top things I'm thinking about in soybeans, soybean gall midge, at least on the end rows. I'm thinking about soybean aphids. Those are just terrible yield robbers, and then bean leaf beetles. And yeah, we just unfortunately right now don't have a solution for any of those that would be a BT or something like that that could come in the seed. I have to assume people are thinking about that, possibly looking at that, but right now, yeah, we just have nothing here.
Okay, I got a question here. This one comes from Nolan. He said, I'm sending you some pictures and also my soil fertility recommendations that I got. Here's the story. I've got
just the recommendations, not the actual test.
Well, I'll dig on email and see if there's more. But
okay,
he said, I want to plant straight into this. I've been growing forage oats.
Sure.
I'm going to switch to grain corn.
I
just want to plant and then follow up with Roundup and Outlook. And I'm wondering, will the residue on the field hinder the effectiveness of Outlook? Is there a height that you look at or anything like that?
18 inches. If it's less than 18 inches, you should be in pretty good shape. And is there some residue here? Sure there is. There was what crop did you say this was?
It's going to go into corn. Forage oats.
Yeah, oats. Okay. Yeah, I knew it was small grain of some kind. I couldn't see exactly what it was. But anyway, yeah, so there's oat stubble that's still there. It's really not that big a deal. So we've referenced this a few times on the show, but University of Missouri did the study where basically they found if your cover crop or whatever you had out there is above 18 inches, yes, you could have a problem. If it's less than that, you should be fine. Iowa State had a study just a few years ago that to get 100% of the residue off, I'm going to say, don't quote me on this, but it was something like 2¾ inches of rain, but that most of the herbicide came off that residue with something like 3/4 of an inch. So again, I don't remember the exact numbers. I could pull it up, but you get the gist of it. We're not worried about it. You get a little bit of rain, it's going to go down. We've done stuff like this for years. We started no-tilling over 25 years ago and experimenting with things like this. We used Prees. They work great. I'm not worried.
All right. And then the other thing he said, I've always wondered if Midwest Labs recommendations account for the organic matter in the soil and phosphate versus phosphorus and organic matter equation on the soils clinic reference guide that you had. And yes, he did only send the recommendation sheet, Brian, not the actual soil tests.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly how they do every little bit of their recommendations. So what I would suggest you do is call them. Just call Midwest Labs and ask them, or whatever lab you're working with, and say, hey, I just want to understand how you're arriving at the numbers that you are. Do I actually need these things? Could I cut back on certain things? And you go from there.
Okay. I had a question come in from Free. It says, how do you measure the soil salinity manually?
I don't know. So we take a sample and we send it into a lab
send it in and make sure that the test that you're getting is going to have a salinity measurement on it, because some tests don't have that.
No.
So if you're not sure, look it up on your lab of choice, look it up on their website or give them a call.
I'm glad you brought up 6 inches. Yes, we do soil test for the most part 6 inches deep. But let's say you're having a real salinity problem. It would be a good idea to test down a little bit deeper. But really, quite frankly, the whole salinity thing could be solved unbelievably easily. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but you put tile in the ground, you get your calcium levels up to above 65%, you reduce compaction, you try to build soil organic matter. I mean, all these things, it's all about improving drainage. But in most cases, somebody puts tile in the ground, the salinity problem fixes itself because salt is leachable. So nothing to get that worried about. Just got to improve the drainage.
Well, improving drainage is one thing, but we're talking about improving protein levels in wheat on today's Ag PhD radio show. Stay tuned.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications, all without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Are you being offered a complete seed treatment package? If your seed treatment doesn't help against soybean diseases like white mold, sudden death syndrome, and rhizoctonia, then it's not complete. Heads Up Seed Treatment offers protection against all of these diseases through its unique mode of action, systemic acquired resistance. Don't get caught off guard in 2024. Get the best defense against the unpredictability of each season by completing your seed treatment package with Heads Up. Visit headsupst.com to learn more.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com. Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revaton, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revaton drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revaton. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about increasing protein levels in wheat on today's program. And maybe you don't raise wheat on your farm, and that's fine if you don't. But I bet you've got other crops that you'd love to see higher protein levels on, whether it's corn that you're feeding to livestock, silage that you get from corn or sorghum. Even soybeans. We've seen soybeans really struggle with protein levels. And there are some tips we can take from what growers are doing in wheat and other things maybe don't translate. But hopefully you get some ideas here on how fertility timing, fertility types, even variety selection can make a difference on the nutrient composition of whatever you're trying to raise. We'll start off. We got Corey Dothy with us right now with Syngenta. How you doing, Corey?
Hey, good. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. All right. I know there's a lot of work getting done in the breeding programs on wheat around building higher protein level products. Talk us through it. If we've got growers that say, man, I really need to have higher protein levels, how big a difference can we make just by picking the right varieties?
I think a huge difference. And, you know, the first thing growers will tell you, you know, we want it all. We want yield. We want protein and the whole package, you know, which we're trying to get there. And I think we are definitely closing the gap. You know, we are a breeding company and we take some of that stuff to heart and we watch the market and what the market might need. But at the end of the day, you know, being a breeder of wheat, it's a numbers game. You know, we start with a lot of different lines and it may take 8 to 10 years as you whittle that down. And then kind of select based on what the market might need. And for us personally, yield and protein are two of the top things you look at. Yield is always going to be number one, but protein, you know, is right in there with it. And with protein, you kind of get this inverse relationship with yield, right? So we kind of break it down into buckets once we get down to finally releasing a variety. And those three buckets would be high yield generally is the lesser pro, lower yield, generally a higher protein, and then a type of variety that maybe balances the two.
You know, when we talk to wheat farmers all over, a lot of them are running some pretty big acres and they're picking up seed by the semi-load, Corey. And you say, all right, we want to see you put on several different varieties out there, spread your risk out. And guys are like, man, I got a whole semi-load I'm going to plant through. Do you see that same challenge around the country? Or is it just me and some of the guys I'm talking to that they get stuck in one or two varieties and want to plant a lot of acres to them?
They do get stuck. And we try to promote that all the time. You know, spread your risk, plant two or three. You know, we have all these different types, if you will. So we promote that, but yeah, you're right. And so then it comes down to management. If they do go into one, if it's a higher yield they're after, we're trying to manage the protein. But at the end of the day, you know, we got to decide, you know, are we going to get paid for that protein? So we look at different factors there too and try to get them into the right product. So if they are, you know, sticking with one across a lot of acres, hopefully that fits the bill. Not only protein and yield, but the rest of the package as well, because if you have a farmer that likes to push and they want to get the best yield, the highest yield they can, well, other things come into play. That could be standability. It could be whatever that might ding you in the end. So,
yeah, there are a lot of things to think about here as you're picking which wheat variety or varieties you're going to be planting. We're talking with Corey Dothy with Syngenta and AgriPro here. Corey, when you look at management practices, varieties often respond a little different, one variety versus the next. But what would you say is kind of a timing for in-season or later season nitrogen applications in wheat?
Yeah, management is a big part, especially when you're talking protein. You know, I like to spread it out and feed it, if you can, across the course of the summer. You know, put on a yield goal, whatever your yield goal might be, say it's 60, 70 up front, and if you want to get up to 80 or 90, you can do an in-season, you know, 28% application at 5-leaf. Sometimes that isn't feasible, right? So you get more on up front. And then kind of feel out the summer. You know, we talk about these rescue applications of nitrogen, you know, after flowering and things like that. They can work to boost some protein, but at the end of the day, it comes down to economics. Maybe it's not worth it either. So we're trying to balance that too, watch what we're getting paid at the elevator. And the tough thing about wheat, you don't exactly know once this crop is going in what you're going to get paid for a protein premium or discount. So, you know, it's nice to be able to spread that risk out across the growing season. And, you know, if you have to add a little nitrogen on later, well, you can do that.
Yeah, there are a lot of decisions, and you're right. There's no guarantee in wheat exactly how it's going to work out, if there's going to be a decent premium, if it's going to be the same as last year or wildly different. We don't often know, but one thing I do know is most growers are pretty happy if they've got some high-protein wheat to sell. So that's why we're talking about that on today's program. Corey, thank you so much. We want to have you back sometime again to talk a little more about wheat.
All right. Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
All right, we're going to go next to the state of South Dakota. Got Lee Lubers, our friend out there with us. He is with the Extreme Ag Group. Hey, Lee, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
All right, we're talking about increasing protein levels in wheat. What are your best tips for farmers out there?
The best results we've had is when we kind of started focusing on not just keeping our nitrogen levels up for the crop, but also getting more into using micros, making sure our zinc levels are up good, addressing boron, start looking at the secondaries. And once we started getting those levels up, it seems like protein started coming up on our crop.
You know, over the years, we've talked so much about nitrogen. It's nitrogen, nitrogen, nitrogen. Well, maybe some of the things like zinc and boron and, I mean, whatever else that you're using out there, maybe that's helping nitrogen come available. What do you think it is that's going on that is improving things?
Well, the boron, yeah, like you mentioned, that's very important. It syncs well with the nitrogen, but it's also really important during reproductive timing for pollen set and for grain fill. And maybe the years prior, when we didn't focus so much on the boron, we wasn't really getting to utilize our nitrogen. Maybe we're just getting a lot better utilization of what we're doing. But it seems like things are working better as we're kind of focusing more on the secondaries, on the smaller pieces of our fertility and filling in those blanks. It seems like, yes, we've gained on yield, but we've also gained on test weight and protein.
There are a lot of ways to put zinc and boron on. On our farm, we do a lot of dry. We also do some liquid at planting time. We do some liquid foliar. What have you found to be the best to give you the best result in your wheat?
We're dry guys ourselves, and dry boron in our blends has been working great. And we can always go back in, like at herbicide timing, and there's some good liquid micro packs out there. We can add a little bit more on if we think the potential is really there, if we're getting good rains. Zinc, we actually run a zinc sulfate blend when we plant our wheat in the fall, because that's really good for that early root growth and establishment before we go into dormancy.
Have you had any issues with the boron at all? Because everybody talks about, well, boron is toxic. Are you afraid of that? Or what are kind of your guidelines on the farm?
We just use it. People are just overreacting when they say that. I mean, if your calcium levels are up there decent, you've got the natural buffer in place. And yeah, what we're putting on, we're not worried about hurting the crop. We know we're helping it.
All right. Any last tips you got for us today, Lee, whether it's protein or, quite frankly, anything else in wheat that you've identified here maybe in the last couple, 3 years?
Just having a good overall systems approach. It starts with good varieties. There's some great varieties out there. We spread our risk out with about 3 varieties, and then we try to manage accordingly. And like I said, the more we're focusing on filling in the blanks, getting all those pieces in place, everything has come up. Yield, test weights, and protein.
Yeah, it's all important stuff. I mean, our focus is protein today, but you mentioned yield and test weight as well. You don't want just one without having the others too. Well, we've been talking with Lee Lubers. He's a farmer in South Dakota, does a great job here in our state. He's also with the Extreme Ag Group. And if you want to learn more about what those farmers are doing, just check out extremeag.farm. Lee, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate having you on the show.
Hey, anytime.
You bet. All right, stay tuned. We're going to talk just a little bit more about increasing protein levels in wheat right after this.
Right now at CNB, get 0% financing for 72 months on select John Deere compact utility tractors, riding mowers, and gators. Hurry, offer ends April 30th, 24. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an AgroLiquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit mortonbuildings.com.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're talking about increasing protein levels in wheat. We're also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. All right, been talking a little bit about variety selection to start the show, and certainly as you change varieties, they're going to have their own different tendencies, and you can certainly pick some varieties much more likely to have higher protein levels. That's one way to go. I just heard Lee talking about some of the different nutrients that they're using and management timing and practices to try to make adjustments along the way and get the highest protein levels that they can out of each variety that they choose. And kind of an overall picture now with Phil Needham with Needham Ag Technologies about increasing protein levels is next on the docket. How you doing, Phil?
Hey, Darren, doing real good. What about you, sir?
You know, we're doing well. We're doing well. We've got a start to our planting season here, and stuff is starting to come along a little bit. We've got a little ways to go, but as we get started in the season, one question we often get, I'll talk to farmers and say, well, couldn't I just put on more nitrogen at planting time? Won't that just hang in there longer and ultimately lead to more protein? I wish it worked that way, Phil, but it often doesn't. Why does putting all your nitrogen up front not always end up with more protein in the end?
I'd say there's two reasons for that, maybe more than two, but one would obviously be in a wet season with maybe some clay soils that are prone to denitrify nitrogen, so you've got nitrogen loss I would say that would be reason number one. Reason number two, especially on spring wheat, in a season where you've got warm soils and lots of nitrogen, 100% put down at seeding time, you know, we've seen many times where growers get a huge amount of biomass, lots of tillers per plant, as a result of that huge amount of nitrogen early. So then you've got lodging problems, you've got massive amounts of biomass per acre, and in effect that dilutes the amount of nitrogen you put on, in addition to creating lodging problems and reducing protein. So we always recommend splitting it, you know, depending on location, and if it's winter wheat and spring wheat, you know, there's lots of different reasons how we'd split it, but we always recommend a split application for yield, for canopy control or manipulation, and protein in hard wheat, which needs the protein, okay?
How about this, Phil? We've heard some growers, like Eric Watson down in New Zealand, that set a world record. He had a lower population than what a lot of guys are seeding up here. How big a deal is planting population? Is it just as much nitrogen out in the field, but less plants to divide it out? Is that part of the strategy?
So I've not met Mr. Watson, but I did have a chance 6 or 7 years ago to meet Mike Solari, who broke the world record prior to Mr. Watson. And he broke it twice. He broke his own record. And he had some wheat a number of years that actually had a birthday. And if I'm not mistaken, he planted 1 year in mid-February. Remember, they're in the Southern Hemisphere. And I think he told me he planted wheat in mid-February, but he didn't harvest it till early March the following year. So it had like a 12.5-month growing season. So if you've got a massively long, cool growing season, like what Mr. Watson has or Mike Solari, to an extent, England, some years they can get good high yields, and I think the highest world record holder is in England right now. But my point is, if you've got a long growing season, 11 or 12 months in duration, with 60-day or 70 or 80-day grain filling times, I mean, most areas of the U.S. struggle to get more than 30 or 35 days of grain fill. But if you've got this huge long growing season, you can plant what they call ultra-low seeding rates because they'll get lots of tillers per plant. So that's kind of the background behind the ultra-low planting dates. They're generally associated with these very long growing seasons, okay?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah, definitely it's different, and you don't see the high temperatures like we see in Kansas and some of the
exactly.
areas here. Okay, another thing we talk about, it's nice to see a split application of nitrogen. How about other nutrients? Which other nutrients would you say are really key when it comes to building protein besides nitrogen?
So sulfur's important, and it's really interesting. Our wheat in Kentucky right now is heading to flowering for the most part, some a little more advanced, some not quite, but that's where most of it is. And just driving up and down the roads, looking at fields that have canopy exposed to the road on the side of the field, and you kind of just look at it from the side. Some fields are green from top to bottom, and some fields are starting to yellow from the bottom up. So some of that's nitrogen deficiencies. We're also seeing some sulfur deficiencies starting to show up also. Years ago, we wasn't super high on sulfur because we had so many coal-fired power plants and lots of sulfur dioxide emissions. It wasn't a huge deal. But since they've been closing a lot of coal fire plants or cleaning up the coal, low sulfur coal, diesel fuels getting cleaned up, we're starting to see a lot more sulfur responses. And coincidentally, I've got a replicated plot where we're looking at different sulfur products, and we maintain the same nitrogen rate across all of the treatments, 4 replications. And I was pulling tissue tests about a week or 10 days ago. And despite the same amount of nitrogen being applied to all the plots, we're just changing the sulfur rates and sulfur products. Different sulfur products appeared to be changing the percentage of nitrogen in the plant. For example, an untreated check with regards to sulfur had the lowest nitrogen content. It was like 3%. Where some of the other, and this is all the same variety, planted the same day, the only variable is the sulfur, but some of the different sulfur treatments had an increase in nitrogen content from about 3 in the unsulfur treated up to about 4 or 4.2, if I remember right. So I was surprised to see that. I don't remember seeing that before. You know, some people say, yes, you need sulfur to promote protein. You've heard that at different meetings, but I've never seen any evidence to support it. But that might be a step towards that evidence, okay?
Yeah, yeah, that is really interesting. And we know sulfur is a big one. We're talking to a lot of growers in different crops, too, that are saying, wow, I'm adding more sulfur than I ever have before, and it's really helping me out. The other thing that we're seeing a lot in wheat crops, and you've certainly been a champion of this, is fungicide applications, plant health, disease control, all those benefits, keeping that flag leaf clean. Have you noticed a difference where growers are using multiple applications of fungicide? Has that made a difference with protein as they're able to catch a little more sunlight, do a little more photosynthesis?
It definitely helps yield. I'm going to say in the right conditions, it would help protein also, provided the adequate nitrogen is available all the way to the end. And that kind of goes back to the first question you asked me. You know, if somebody puts all the nitrogen down at planting time and it starts running out through the season as a result of losses or a huge biomass canopy that mops up a lot of nitrogen and dilutes it in that canopy, you know, as long as you've got nitrogen available to the end, I think a greener plant as a result of an SDHI or a strobilurin or a mixture of the two at flag leaf and then one at flowering for fusarium suppression, you know, those combinations would keep that plant healthier, greener for longer, extending the yield, and I'm going to say maintaining protein, because obviously as the yield goes up, there's a dilution effect that normally kicks in to reduce protein. So I'm going to say the fungicides would help protect yield or maximize yield while maintaining protein as long as nitrogen and other nutrients like sulfur are available at the end to fulfill that protein that's laid down last in the petition in the grain, okay?
Man, great stuff as always. We're talking with Phil Needham here with Needham Ag Technologies. Phil, thank you so much. We always appreciate having you on. You're just such a great source of info on wheat and really appreciate having you today.
Anytime. Thanks for the invite. Thanks, Darren.
You bet. Talking about increasing protein levels in wheat. We've given you some good nuggets here to chew on just a little bit. And of course, you can always re-listen to the show and check out our podcast, those types of things too, for more information. If you've got questions, we'd love to help you. Our phone lines are open, 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. We've been talking about increasing protein levels in wheat, but we're going to get back to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute. If you've got a question for us, you can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. So to finish things out on this increasing protein level in wheat discussion, yeah, there are many things that you can do. It's everything from picking different varieties. Planting date could have a slight impact on things. But, you know, the biggest thing that we're always going to be talking about, it's nitrogen. It's your overall fertility program. It's how nitrogen can get used in that plant. So Lee Luber's brought up, hey, zinc, boron, just like Phil Needham was saying, you know, a lot of people talk about sulfur, along with, quite frankly, the micronutrients like Lee did, but there just hasn't been a lot of documentation that that's the bigger factor or that's much of a factor at all. It's just, it's nitrogen, nitrogen, nitrogen. So you want to have nitrogen available later in the year, use a controlled release nitrogen or apply it later in the year. And again, an overlooked factor here is soil organic matter levels. We know higher levels of organic matter release more nitrogen in the soil. That means more nitrogen available for that wheat crop as the season progresses. So those are all things for you to think about. We just want to encourage you. Yes, you can change your protein level in wheat. There are some management factors. All right, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag. We had Geronimo from Indiana call in and ask a question. Here was his question. He just said, how much Roundup does or would he need to add to 35 gallons of liquid 28% so the Roundup would be effective? Well, I'll put it this way. We only at a max recommend 10 gallons of water with Roundup, so 10 gallons of carrier with Roundup. And the reason why is we want to make sure we have more concentrated droplets getting into that plant. It's kind of interesting, about 50 years ago, our dad was involved with Monsanto in the testing of Roundup before it even got labeled. And he just said, he goes, they had me trying all these really high water volume rates, 20 gallons, 30 gallons, 40 gallons. And he said, the more water we used, the less that performance was. So that's how eventually they ended up with, hey, 10 gallons, that's your max. Well, you start putting 35 gallons with it, that's a problem, number one. Number two, you got liquid 28% in there that's going to burn a lot of stuff before the Roundup can get down into the root system and maybe even before it can reach a growing point or however many growing points you got on that plant. So the point is, if it's me, I'm probably never going to do that. I would just say, if you want to spray 35 gallons, 28%, you go for it. And then you see what happens. because that by itself should burn a lot of stuff. Now, if you say, well, I'll just spray that and I'll come back a few days later with Roundup. No, that's never going to work either. You've got to let the weeds recover. If weeds aren't actively growing, Roundup will not control them. So if you want to spray Roundup first by itself with low water volume, fine. Then come back with your 28% a few days later. If you flip it around, you spray the 28% first, you're probably talking a couple weeks before you're going to have enough active growth. And it might be a little less than that, all depends on your weather, but it could be a couple of weeks before you could go out and spray Roundup and have it be effective. But like I say, the 28% by itself, 35 gallons, may burn down what you have out there because I don't know what weeds we're talking about, the height, anything else. So that's how I feel about it, but I will just tell you this. There's no possible chance I would ever recommend a farmer put Roundup together with 35 gallons of nitrogen.
All right, next question is from Scott in Central Ontario, Canada. He said, hey guys, sending you a couple of different soil tests from one of our fields. It's going to be corn. This field, last fall, we broadcast 230 pounds of potash and 30 pounds of elemental sulfur. Now we're going to normally put on 125 pounds of MAP, 100 pounds of K-Mag, 5 pounds of zinc 20%, which is 1 pound of actual zinc. And we do all that in a 2x2. And we also put on 80 units of nitrogen and then side dress the rest at V10. If you look at our soil test, do you think this is a good recommendation or what changes would you make moving forward? With Mother Nature's cooperation, we like to achieve 200 plus bushel corn. If we're raising soybeans, should be at least 50 or 60 bushel.
Okay, so it's 12 or 13 CEC. So we're going to call that medium textured soil. Your soil can hold some stuff, but it's not going to hold a ridiculous amount. I just say, obviously, we're always going to be focused on pH and then next P and K. So soil pH is a little bit on the high side. It's not horrible, 7.5, 7.6, but here's what we always say. If your pH is out of whack, it's outside the sixes, something is off. Something in terms of soil balance is off. What is that? Well, in this case, we're talking 87 and 89% calcium, really high calcium and almost no magnesium. So when you start talking K-Mag, I can understand why, because your magnesium levels are really low, less than 100 parts per million when the calcium is over 2,000 parts per million. So adding more magnesium would be very helpful. That's probably the biggest thing that I would say. If it's me, I'm at least going to try some magnesium sulfate. Or more K-Mag, but probably magnesium sulfate, and see if that helps me. The reason why I probably wouldn't put on more K-Mag is because your potassium levels are not too bad. 260 parts per million, 371 parts per million, and 5 up to 7% base saturation K. So you don't want to go way overboard. You could put a little bit more on, but I just am not going nuts there. And then when I talked about phosphorus a second ago, I mean, your phosphorus levels are good. They're not great, but they're good. So I don't think you've got any real issue there. If you wanted to throw a little more on, you sure could. And then we get to sulfur. That's pretty low. Sulfur, keep in mind, can leach, especially when we're talking about these lighter soils. Yeah, you put 30 pounds of elemental sulfur on. Is it possible you could use more? Yeah, it's certainly possible. I also like elemental sulfur because it does break down slowly over time. It's not instantly available. You're not going to lose it instantly, anything like that. So elemental sulfur is a good way to go. You're only throwing 30 pounds out there. I might consider bumping that to 40, 50 pounds, something like that. But for the most part, I think you got an overall pretty good plan. Oh, one last thing. Copper. We've been talking a lot about copper levels on the show here for probably the last year because we see chronic deficiencies everywhere, almost every soil test that comes in, it's way low on copper. Copper is a key to resiliency in the plant. So you're going to have a lot less green snap in your plant. You're going to have a lot less lodging. You're going to have just better overall resiliency. Fewer, like with soybeans, the seed coats won't bust on you so easy. Even trees, we've talked about trees a few times here this year. You're going to have a lot less of the trees breaking off in an ice storm when you have good copper levels in the soil. Well, you're only at 0.8 and 1.1 parts per million on copper. That's really low. So I like 3 to 5 parts per million on copper personally. So I'd be working on that over time as well.
All right. Thanks for the question. Get this from Double A, who says, hey, guys, appreciated your talk about tillering that you've had recently, but I'm wondering, what about tillers that emerge in corn early in the season around V5, V6? Won't they pull energy and disrupt kernel row set and numbers? Isn't this about the time that, ears are being determined?
You know, people talk about that all the time, but so let's put it this way. Darren especially looks at thousands of different varieties of corn. And this is no joke. I'm not talking about, oh, it's the same variety from a million different companies. I'm talking about truly different varieties, all kinds of maturity ranges. And what do we see, Darren? It's one might have a whole bunch of tillers, the other one, no tillers, and the yield's the same. So it's very common. So I get it in theory. That sounds right, that, oh, the tiller should draw energy away. But in reality, it just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. And oftentimes I like the varieties that do produce tillers or are more likely to produce tillers because we get dry. And when we do, if the plant already has nutrients and moisture in those tillers, it can more easily pull it out of the tillers than it can from very dry soil where the roots are at.
But as you say that, again, that's kind of in theory. In practice, we really don't see that much difference. It's not like, well, I'm going to have a drought. I have to get a variety that has a bunch of tillers. We just don't find that to be true. So anyway, don't get too hung up on tillers. It in corn doesn't seem to be a big deal. Stay tuned. We'll get to more of your questions right after this.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hardworking Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren, broadcasting from the Morton studio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag. We've had a couple of questions that have come in that I wanted to talk about a little bit. So one, just the other day, and I think this might have been on TikTok, it was, how long should a guy wait to plant corn behind spring applied anhydrous? Well, most people wait a day or two, but in this particular case, this person said that he waited 6 days and still had some burn spots. So I was talking to my son Zach about this just a little bit, just trying to teach him some agronomy things. And I said, yeah, here's where we see more problems. It's when you go shallow. And sure enough, this person put the anhydrous 4 inches deep. Well, if you plant 2 to 2.5 inches deep, that's really close. It's really close. You want to separate higher fertility levels, higher fertility application rates with more soil to the seed. So in other words, have it farther away. On our farm, a lot of times we're going 7 to even 10 inches deep with anhydrous. Get it deeper the higher rate you're going. The other thing that a lot of people will do is go at an angle. I mean, the challenge, of course, when you go at an angle is now it could be a little bit rougher at planting, and you want to have a nice smooth planting bed. So that way you get the most even stand possible. But anyway, that's my assumption, is the anhydrous just got a little bit too close there. Had another one come in this morning, and this is from Illinois, from Jay. And he was asking about with Metribuzin and Roundup, is there much antagonism? Because sometimes people are seeing there's less cereal rye control with the Roundup when Metribuzin is added. And here's the thing with that. Is there a little bit of antagonism with Metribuzin to Roundup? Yes, of course. But, I mean, almost anything is going to antagonize Roundup or any grass killer. So any grass killer you've got, if you put a broadleaf herbicide with it, it's going to hurt performance on the grass. Think about when you add any volunteer corn killer to 2,4-D or dicamba in soybeans, what happens? When you add any broadleaf herbicide to Accent in corn or to Axial or Puma or Everest in wheat, grass control goes down. That's just the way it is. But is that the number one factor? Here's what I told Jay. I said, number one, what kind of rate are we talking about? Because what I find is most people aren't using enough rate. They think about cereal rye just like they think about foxtails. Well, it takes way more to kill cereal rye than it does a foxtail plant with Roundup. So you got to use a higher rate. In a lot of cases, I tell guys a quart. On top of that, think about when some of these burn downs are happening. Many people now keep talking about ultra early planting, corn or soybeans or whatever they're doing. Well, guess what usually happens then? It's ultra early burn down spraying. You can't have great control. You won't have great control with any herbicide that has contact activity like Roundup when the weather's cool. When the nighttime temps are below 50 degrees, what we tell people to do and what we found in practice over the last 30 plus years as agronomists is nighttime temp below 50, increase your Roundup rate by 50%. 50%. That takes your quart rate up to a quart and a half. So what I told him is, how many guys are actually using a quart and a half? None. Okay, well, there's your answer. Don't blame it on Metribuzin. You have to look at, what's my rate of Roundup? Am I using the right rate? Now, when you throw any antagonistic herbicide together with something else, how do you overcome that? It's one of two things. Either you don't tank mix it, or you just up the rate a little bit more. So I said, all right, if I'm already up to a quart and a half, how much more do I need because of the Metribuzin? Maybe a tiny little bit. I go from 1.5 quarts up to 1.55 or 1.6. Metribuzin antagonism, in my experience, isn't that much. It's a little bit, but the bigger factor if you're trying to burn down cereal rye is you have to use a rate that's appropriate for the rye, number one, and use a rate that's appropriate for the air temperature, number two. Oh, also, I should say, when we tell people increase your Roundup rate when the temperature's cold, make sure you're still on label. I can't have you doing something that's off label, but as long as it is a labeled rate, make sure you're using the higher rate when it's cold. All right, Darren, what's next?
Okay, got a couple things from Brett. And he said, I've got an observation from last year and also a question. So first of all, I know you guys talk about the hail charts for soybean defoliation and early bean leaf beetle chewing. Last year, we had very significant hail on June 7th. The beans were V2 and V3. Two fields looked bad, but still had a leaf or two. One field was just wiped out to the ground, so we had to replant. We also had 100 acres that were completely missed by the hail, so we got to do some comparisons. Our yield results were where we replanted on June 7th, we had 61 bushels. Where it was damaged, but we didn't replant, we had 60 bushels, yep. So virtually the same.
Yep.
Where we didn't have hail, it went 69 bushels, so significantly better in my mind. Conclusion. I think the charts are old and made to not pay out too much. I mean, until we started following you guys, 60 bushel would have been a great yield for us.
Yep.
But the benefits of early planting and low stress for plants is true for beans as well as corn in our experience.
I don't know how much Iowa State is still doing with this, but I can tell you 20 plus years ago, Darren and I were at Iowa State and they were shooting ice at plants. And right away, we're like, what the heck are you guys doing? Well, we're trying to get information for hail. And they work in conjunction with the hail companies. We just want to know, well, what is the answer? So I agree with you that, yes, it's possible some of these charts could be old.
Especially at super high yields.
Yep. But I would also say, I don't know. I don't have the answer to this. We'd have to ask Iowa State or other universities, are you still running these tests or did you just call it good there? Now, here's the other factor with this. Okay, so what the charts will say, by the way, is if you are still in the vegetative stages with indeterminate soybeans, hail doesn't hurt yield. If you're in the reproductive stages, then, I mean, yes, defoliation can hurt yield, but it's really not that bad if it's the early reproductive stages like R1 or R2. But let's keep in mind, if you have nodes that are cut off, even in the vegetative stages, it will say right on the charts, you're going to lose some yield. And certainly, if plants are dead, so now your population is less, you're going to lose yield. Also, I want you to think about this. This is in weed-free fields, okay? If you have hail, do you have more weeds? Well, almost every farmer is going to answer, well, of course I do. Okay, well, if we don't control those weeds quickly, then that's one of the things that can hurt yield. So there's also the possibility that diseases could enter in. Well, if you're not spraying fungicide, or if you get unlucky and have a bunch of bacterial diseases that get in that you can't control, I mean, those could be other factors too. So there are a lot of things that go into this. So I don't know if I agree that the charts are wrong. Maybe they are, but I just think let's put it this way. It's just like our dad always said, nobody's going to care more about your farm than you. And common sense also always has to be involved with any decision you're making on the farm. And so if you look at things and you evaluate it and you're like, I don't know, it just doesn't look great. That has to weigh in. However, you also have to understand, boy, late planting absolutely hurts yield. So yes, I mean, you got 60 bushels from that real late planting, which, I mean, everybody's going to be happy with, and I'm sure you were as well, but that was a hit from when you planted early and didn't have hail. So, yeah, we feel for you. We've been in those situations before, too.
Got to dive into his question then. He said, I've got a 5-acre patch. I'm raising some specialty crops for some refugee friends of ours. Hey, cool thing, Brett. Thanks for doing that. That's awesome. He said, none of it's GMO, and I've got some issues with water, hemp, and grass out there. I'm raising white corn, sweet corn, grain sorghum, and pinto beans. Now, if it was all the grass crops, this might be a little bit easier, but since you're throwing in that broadleaf crop too, that does make it a little tricky. He said he put dual herbicide down, metolachlor, put on 50 pounds of nitrogen, and he's going to come back with urea in the corn. The fields were a little weedy last year. Any idea what he could come back with? And I got thinking about this. It doesn't really fit those weeds. Bassegran's about the only thing I think post-emergent can spray on everything.
And this is why we always say split things up. Have different crops separate so you can use different products. Now, granted, it's probably a very small area, so it's hard to do. But, yeah, it's a challenge when you have multiple crops and multiple species.
Yeah, there isn't a great idea. The only thing I could think of is you might cultivate those 5 acres. That would give you that other option, but you may choose not to as well, especially if you're going to have lots of people walking out in there. Hey, thanks, Brett. Really appreciate the observation and the question today. And thanks to you for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.